Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, this is Phil Rosenthal, and you're listening to the What Difference Does It Make podcast.
Hey, Holly.
Hey, Dave.
Welcome to the What Difference Does It Make podcast. How are you today?
I am very, very happy to be here today. How are you doing today?
I'm good. We've got some great guests. And who is stepping into our neighborhood?
We have two fantastic guests today. We are welcoming back David Wilde, who was on the podcast a couple months ago. Writer, comedic, brilliant writer.
Just call him brilliant. The brilliant David Wilde. I'm sure he would accept that. And he brought a friend along, a playmate, so to speak.
He did. We have Phil Rosenthal, who does a wide variety of things, but he has a show on Netflix called Somebody Feed Phil, and it is a fantastic show, which I highly recommend. But he also is a prolific TV producer. He created Everybody Loves Raymond, and he is fabulous, and he's funny, and let's just bring them on in.
Yeah, we have two very funny people who also share a love of Bruce Springsteen. So we initially try and talk food, but it just goes right to Springsteen.
It quickly de-escalated from food to Springsteen.
It did de-escalate. That was that was true, which was perfectly all right in my book. So let's get into it. This is David Wilde and Phil Rosenthal talking Springsteen and a little bit of food on the What Difference Does It Make podcast. Hey.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome.
Hi,
Phil and Dave.
Hi, Holly.
Hi, David.
Dave.
Hi. Yes. Welcome, Phil.
So nice to meet you. I'm in what used to be my son's old bedroom, and my wife put in this torture device here.
A torture?
Is that a Pilates? Like, what is?
It is Pilates. Yeah. But I'm allowed to come in here when I have my Zooms.
Oh, you're allowed. Okay.
Unless she's, you know, doing Cirque du Soleil over there.
Have you attempted any of that?
Yes, I have. It's a waste of time.
Okay. All right.
Not. It's just really hard.
Maybe that. maybe that's my excuse.
Yes.
But I'm old fashioned. I like the weights. I like the cardio.
And David likes to run or walk. He's a big walker. Yeah. You're a walker. Okay. The wife is the runner and you just kind of... Try and keep up. I think all of us, we just try and keep up with the wives, basically.
Dave, are you in a garage?
Yeah, you know what? Like, I am. Much like the refurbished kitchen that's going on in David's room, my master bedroom is going through some changes. And so everything's...
But it looks like you've got a pro setup there.
Oh, it looks pro, right? Yeah, it's all smoke and mirrors, really.
And Holly, are you in a closet?
I'm in my office that doubles as a treadmill.
Yeah.
Tried to make it look a little more, you know, I've gotten some pro tips,
nice.
But I'm waiting, you know. Yeah. No, it's a little bigger than a closet. A little.
It is. I know.
Yeah.
I can see both.
We're trying. We're desperately trying.
Although I would happily trade out my treadmill for the Pilates. That would be a nice thing to have at home.
Oh, let me see if my wife will sell it to you.
Yeah. I don't know what happened to it. It just disappeared.
Yeah.
So there's two things that you should know going into this. One, they only interviewed me a few months ago to get to you.
No.
And two, we like Holly. I'm not going to say anything else about any other person who runs the podcast, but we very much like Holly.
I like them both, Dave.
Thank you. The diplomat.
I'm an equal opportunity, yeah.
Honestly, he offered you up without any prompting. It was really kind of freaky. I was like, why are you offering up Phil for no reason? But, okay, we'll take him.
Well, because you knew he'd...
Trying to get exposure for this young kid in the business.
Okay, wait, before anything, can I ask you, you have not lost your accent at all. I'm talking to Phil. You don't have that tenafly accent anymore, David. Yeah, you still have your New York accent. New York thing.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. It was hard earned. I'm not like Bruce Springsteen. He gets, as my friend says, he gets twangy. Like, Bruce, you're not a cowboy. You're from New Jersey.
I mean, he's got the Western Sky. That just came out.
He likes playing a role. When he's writing, I think he's a great writer, and he gets into character. And a lot of the songs have a kind of Western twang to it, don't they?
Yeah.
Kind of like Madonna adopting that British accent.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now, and when
he's less pretentious on him.
But when you're out on the road, I hear you like to eat and go places in different
yes,
countries.
Heard that.
Do you find like sometimes these accents kind of come out of you mistakenly?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. You know, everybody has a little bit of Zelig in them. You try to kind of fit in with who you're with. And like we just did a show in a southern part of the world, and you find yourself, you know, wanting to talk that way. It's kind of fun.
Are you good? So give us a little sample, and we'll try and guess where you were.
Is it like gefilte fish, y'all?
Yes, that's right. By the way, I have some Jewish relatives in Atlanta who literally say shalom, y'all.
Yeah.
I didn't think there were any Jews in Atlanta.
Yeah, there's a few.
Yeah, you can get that.
Nobody likes them.
Yeah, it's my wife's from Texas, and she has. Yes. They have the shalom, y'all, welcome mat, yeah. And yeah,
isn't that great?
Yeah, why not?
Why not?
Okay, so since we're talking hometowns and things like that, and it's the holidays, and food seems to be centered around that, can we talk about like some memories, some Hanukkah things, and like foods that you think of during Hanukkah time that you have to eat? Do you have recipes? Anything like that?
What kind of show is this?
I don't know. I just want to.
I'm going to say latkes. How's that for an answer?
All right. But I mean, is there something that
David,
needs?
You want to fight me on that?
No, no. In fact, Phil won't admit this, but like a couple of years ago, I was asked to write the biannual Reformed Jewish Hanukkah celebration, like national Hanukkah celebration, and it was the nanny co-hosted, Fran Drescher. And so, but for that, Phil and I went to the deli on Fairfax and
Cantor?
Did a whole Cantor? Segment on his favorite Hanukkah foods.
There's some great delis in Los Angeles. In fact, Langer's Deli was chosen by, I think, Nor Ephron wrote about it in the New Yorker magazine and said, the best pastrami sandwich in America is at Langer's, not New York.
Hands down.
And I believe it. It's true. I think she was right. I think that's the best pastrami sandwich because the bread, the pastrami, I think is equally good at Katz's. I really do. But the bread at Katz's in New York is a Shonda. And the bread at Langer's is the best rye bread in the world.
And speaking of delis, we used to go often to Art's Deli, where Phil and Ray had their first meeting and where Everybody Loves Raymond was born at Art's Deli, where Phil, what is true of every sandwich?
Every sandwich is a work of art.
Still. Yeah. Next, I went to Art's Deli for a sick friend, a sick famous actor friend. I went to pick up matzo ball soup I said to my wife, let's bring him some soup. So somehow it was $118 of matzo ball soup that I picked up.
Are they gold matzo balls?
That's right. At those prices. But I picked it up, and I was thrilled to find out that Licorice Pizza, they've built a store, the Licorice Pizza store, right next door to Art. So you can have matzo ball soup at $118 and go to Licorice Pizza, which is pretty cheaper.
When I went to see my first Springsteen show in 1984, I spent the night in front of a Licorice Pizza in West Hills, California, to get tickets for his Born in the USA tour.
My first tour was the River Tour.
Not to one-up you, Dave.
Yeah.
1980.
Fine. All right. And Nassau, or where'd you go?
Nassau Coliseum. That's one of the famous recordings, actually.
My first Springsteen concert was 1980. Also, the River Tour at Madison Square Garden.
Even
and
better.
My brother and I went to my father, who was a New Jersey businessman not directly in the mob, but apparently mob adjacent enough so that when I said, Dad, we really want to see this Bruce Springsteen guy we love, my older brother and I both begged. And he goes, do you really want this? And we said, yeah. He goes, so I'm going to call a favor in. Oh. And he literally told us, okay, go see the maitre d', go into the city, go to the maitre d' of Sparks Steakhouse, which was the site of a famous mob hit around this time. And the maitre d' handed us two tickets that I believe, I have this vague memory, there might have been blood on the envelope. But we got these tickets and we sat next to Max Weinberg's mother at the River Show at Madison Square Garden. Oh, so I'll never
forget. There was blood on her too. Yeah.
Exactly.
Take the tickets, drop the cannoli. Is that what they told you? Or
it might have been. It might have been. It was like that situation.
I thought they might have been, you know, go to the toilet. You know, the tickets are taped to the inside of the toilet tank.
Don't come out.
I have a feeling somebody died for that. Somebody with a hungry heart died for those
tickets. Oh, my.
Good one.
Nice.
Well, you guys all have me beat. I'm pretty sure Born in the USA was my first.
We have you beat by being older.
Yeah.
No, not much. You said that last time.
So have you guys watched the No Nukes show yet?
I have to say, I haven't seen this new compilation yet. About to watch tonight.
No spoilers.
I bought it on Apple thing, and I'm having a few people over, having pizza, and we're watching it on a very big screen with big sound. And I couldn't be more excited because the first time I heard Bruce Springsteen, I was 15 years old, and somebody played me Born to Run. And I thought, this guy is a singer? This is singing? What is this? And it scared
me.
Actually.
Were you older then?
I was 15.
Yeah.
But I was always 80.
Right. Is he Jewish? Yeah. Is that what your first question was?
Maybe I like it.
Springsteen? Sure. It's got to be Jewish.
That's what it sounded like to me. Okay. I'm like, well, it's not for me. And then I go to college and people are circulating these tapes, these bootleg tapes. And I hear the humor in him and the joy and the fun and the power. And I get it. Now, this is pre-MTV. This is 1977. This is pre-everything. There's no way to see him unless you're going to the show. Well, once I started becoming addicted to the tapes, then I was getting all the albums. Then I was becoming a rabid fan. And here comes this No Nukes movie in 79. And now I get to see him at least. And for those of you who don't know, No Nukes is a compilation of many artists of the time, James Taylor, Carly Simon, Jackson Brown, Bonnie Raitt, a lot of great, all my favorites from the 70s, really. It's really a time capsule if you're lucky enough to see it. I don't even know how you can see that movie today. So there's three Springsteen songs. And I remember because I saw it many times. It was the first time I ever saw them. Thunder Road, The River, and Quarter to Three. When you see Quarter to Three, you become a Springsteen fan. I don't care who you are.
Yeah.
You may be able to you sit through the river. I get it, though. Good song. Thunder Road, great song. Quarter Three, this is undeniable. You are seeing rock and roll personified. You are seeing the joy, the majesty, the power, everything about performance, rock, childlike enthusiasm, just joy, joy, joy. And from that moment on, I had to do whatever I could do to see this person live. And the next year was the River Tour, 1980. And I remember my mother's friend's daughter got tickets. And I said, she was about 5 years younger than me. So I'm 20 at this time. And I say that I will marry you if you will let me go to this show. I was lying, but that's how deeply I want to go. And so I took 20-year-old, took three 15-year-olds to the show. And the one crying was me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So from that point on, yes. So to answer your question, I haven't seen this whole thing, but I've seen the three songs from it. And I cannot wait to watch because I hear this is like the Holy Grail. This is him at his peak. You know, if you think his filet mignon years were 75 to 85, this is right in the middle. This is peak, 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 a human lightning bolt on stage, right? If you saw that tour. Wow, I can't wait. And this is, they were recording, as I understand, correct me if I'm wrong, they were recording the River album in 79.
Yeah.
And he did something that he swore he wouldn't do, which is go on stage while they're recording, because he didn't want to break up that energy or that focus. And he went on and he did a 90-minute set two nights. And this is the best of the two nights, I believe, in 90 minutes, right?
Yeah. And the thing you said, it's interesting, about 2:45.
Yeah.
There's a certain moment where I was going back over my love of Springsteen, where I realized, I think the amazing thing about him is when you go through all of rock history, in certain ways, I think I speak for both of us, Phil, he's kind of our favorite. And yet, I will say, the fact that you said that about 2:45 is, it makes me think that he is the greatest figure in popular music history who is not a real original. I think what he is someone who synthesized so much that is great in music, and such a student of it, and so much passion for the form of the rock star. Where, you know, the 2:45 is a Gary U.S. Bond song. Yep. A couple of years later, you know, I didn't know who Gary U.S. Bonds was until
he brought him out with him.
Right. And he produced him and he did That Little Girl. And actually the record after that, which I think is much better than that. And he made me love Gary U.S. Bonds just in the same way. I think for our generation, for Phil and I, I'll only speak it for us. I think he synthesized, because we're old, he synthesized what was great about Dylan. We felt the thrill of what people, like, we don't really remember when Like a Rolling Stone hit or when the Beatles hit. But I think the closest we had was that moment where Bruce Springsteen hit and was the cover of Time, the cover of Newsweek, where we really felt he brought us the thrill of the new and reinvented Fogerty and reinvented Dylan and reinvented Chuck Berry and reinvented Gary U.S. Bonds. He did all of that.
And Elvis,
exactly. He brought all of that alive for us so that we felt it through him. And so I think in a weird way, he, like when people are talking about the Beatles right now because of the, you know, the movie and all that, I think Bruce is still my favorite of all of them, even though in my heart, he's not the inventor of as much as other people, but he is the perfecter and the embodiment of so much of it for me.
That's well said. And he's such a student and a lover of the what came before him. And he honors it in every show, right?
Yeah.
I think there's a case to be made. This is a big statement. Greatest performer who ever lived.
I have one argument against that, which is Prince.
Also great. But even he didn't command the arena or the stadium with such fervent, religious zeal. Even he get as quite as high. Talent, no question, but as a charismatic figure.
Like, you could see yourself in, you see Prince dance in 6-inch heels and you're like, I can't do that. Then you see Bruce dance and like, he's just a goofball having fun. And like, I could see myself in that. Or you can kind of imagine yourself. Yeah, right, exactly. Like you watch the Rosalita video. Like, I wish. I mean, I could see. You know, you see that passion, and there's like, an I want girls that, to want, you know, to love me like that.
There's an energy that is superhuman. There's an energy. I don't even think Prince could do what Bruce does for 4 hours.
Well, I think Prince died trying to continue being Prince at his age, and
he couldn't even dance anymore because he was so damaged by the crazy moves that he did, right? Which led to the painkillers, because he really hurt his hips and legs. He was phenomenal. No denying it.
I think the thing is, I saw Hyde Park at your house, Phil, where Bruce is like, that's Bruce just like at the point of exhaustion, just in front of the biggest crowd in the world. But the truth is, Phil went to see Bruce on Broadway before me and told me, you have to go. And then when I went, I think I called you right after and I said, it's the best thing I've ever seen. Because, and I mean, literally in popular culture, that was the best night I ever had watching anyone do anything. And I've seen great people on Broadway, great actors. But the truth is, I like the Broadway more than any of the physically exhaustive performances, because every word counted. And I remember a phrase he said, like talking about Clarence and talking about the sort of racial symbolism of what, you know, what they were doing. And I thought, this is the most meaningful thing. And I'm in some level, I could be ashamed. I'm sad that maybe something, maybe that I liked it more than Long Day's Journey Into Night. You know, O'Neill's quite good, but Springsteen slightly, maybe because O'Neill never did Rosalita.
Because he's a writer. He's a writer. That's what made that evening. And that's what maybe, you know, you can add to greatest performer of all time. Who has the writing chops that factor into the song that he's singing and therefore the performance that he's given? The writing has weight to it, which makes the performance better. Name another person who has that bench of songs and then can draw from the past and do that fantastically well, right?
Yeah. I can't even think of another artist who could do, no one comes to me who could do something like that, the Broadway show, you know?
I was always hoping that Southside Johnny would do an off-Broadway show as a New Jersey boy. Oh, there you go.
No, John Cafferty
and
right,
Beaver Holly. Brown do a community theater thing.
Well, but Holly is right. You can't think of another person that you would sit there for 2 hours. They're not dancing. They're hardly an up-tempo in the yeah. group of songs. And it is 1,000% riveting and beautiful.
Do you know why that show came about?
Yes, he did it for the Obamas at the White House.
Exactly. Right? And Barack Obama was like, yeah, like that's a great, what you did should be shared with the world.
By the way, the Obamas
have Hamilton start that way?
Exactly right. I was going to say the Obamas might be the greatest producers who ever lived. Right.
That's high praise.
Yeah. I mean, that's right. They invited Lin-Manuel to do a song at this gala, and he came in with this new thing he was working on and sang the first song from Hamilton, and that was it.
Yeah, he's like, good luck with this Hamilton thing. People want to hear about this guy.
The moment you hear the song, you're in.
So we need to send Obama out into the universe to discover more.
Yeah.
Just wasting away. What's he doing with his life? I tell you.
But that's the other thing, David, about your feeling about the Broadway show is that Springsteen evolves and changes and adapts, whereas some people hang on to the past and try to imitate what they used to do. But he is just as great standing in front of you with an acoustic guitar and singing as he was 45 years ago with the band.
And what you were saying about, David, what you were saying about, you know, he might not be the originator of it. I can't think in other, you know, in other genres. But I don't think the originators are necessarily the best. We recognize them as the originators, but, you know, just because Springsteen took from other, you know, from other artists.
Oh, yeah. In fact, it's interesting you say that because I did, for something I was working on recently, I watched Hail Hail Rock and Roll for the first time in many years.
Chuck Berry, right?
And I worked with Taylor Hackford on a bunch of projects. We did a Ray Charles TV tribute. We wrote Ahmet Erdogan's funeral together. I love Taylor. But in that movie, if you look at it, I write a lot of funerals. I'm available for any of yours. I'm excited for the opportunity. In that movie, there's a moment where you see Chuck, I guess he's sitting around with Johnny Johnson, who was this great keyboard player who he screwed over and took credit for everything he did, you know. But in it, he does this like bluesy thing, very elegant, jazzy, bluesy version of Cottage for Sale. And it's the greatest thing you've ever heard because it's a mature, it's like, what if Chuck Berry had not just kept playing every gig that paid him, you know, in cash with every pickup band, but it actually worked with good musicians who he, you know, regularly and like tried to grow up. The thing is, Chuck Berry never really did do that. Bruce, like what Phil said earlier was so interesting to me about his purple patch or golden era, whatever you called it, that, you know, to the 85. The truth is, you know, and this is an 80s podcast. I was thinking about Bruce in the 80s. And is that not fair to say it's sort of 80s themed a little bit?
Oh, it's very fair.
Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. But for the podcast, like I was thinking, my favorite Bruce like starts around Tunnel of Love, which is, I guess, 89 and like his end of the 80s. And, And some of my favorite stuff, like right now, I can honestly say I'm really most into his last record, which I'm sure Bruce would appreciate. But like, and I think I liked Western Hero much more than Phil, even though I think there is an element of bullshit to it, where like we both, I think, know somebody who's close to the Bruce in the Bruce world who said, like, listen, I know him. He ain't a fucking cowboy. You know, like, you know, there's certain truth in that. But
you were saying.
But that album, my wife and sons can tell you, I played that record for a year and a half.
Beautiful record.
It just destroys me because that's my first memories of music are like my mom was having troubles. It was my parents were going through a terrible divorce. My mom was having manic depressive and misdiagnosed. And it was a rough time in my like, so this is like in the 70s. We had a maid who helped us out who came from Jamaica. And so I was raised with this maid playing her records, a black woman from Jamaica who loved Glen Campbell and Tom Jones on 8-track tape. So my first memories are like listening to Glen Campbell do Wichita Lineman and sitting like in the living room, hiding out from all the domestic issues in my household. And I love Glen Campbell as a result. Like that's
my grandmother used to say, why don't you do your hair like Glen Campbell? He has such nice hair.
We are talking Bruce. We are talking Bruce. It's Bruce Talk. All Bruce all the time on a very special episode of What Difference Does It Make? But with all special episodes, sometimes we have to take a special break. Let's do that right now.
Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here, taking a break from listening to a little Shouted Out Loudcast episode. Love Tom and Zeus talking all things Kiss. Of course, I was listening to them on my new Raycon wireless earbuds. They have quickly become my go-to earbuds because of the comfort. These soft tips are the best I've ever used. And at this price, plus a Pantheon discount, Raycon is really hitting on all marks. Sound quality is great too. I really love having these three EQ options because I like more bass in the music, but less in my podcast. 8 hours of playtime for the battery is great as well. Surround sound, noise isolating, and awareness mode are all included. These are great earbuds. Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order plus free shipping. That's right. You'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon. Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here. Another day, another podcast I'm working on. This time, it's Famous and Gravy with Amit and Michael. I want to let you know that I loved the Factor Meals package so much that I re-upped for myself, and then I sent a package to my in-laws. Like I was with my first shipment from Factor Meals, the in-laws were as excited to try one of the prepared restaurant-quality meals. Well, they got the shipment to Protein Plus meal plan and were very impressed. See, being in their 80s, anything to make the meal prep easy is a plus for them. They heated the oven per instructions and minutes later were enjoying a very delicious, nutritious, and dietitian-approved meal. One big win for me. But what really floored them was the taste. Like I told you, it's surprising how good these meals taste. Restaurant quality indeed. And like my own shipment, it really was everything Factor Meals said it would be for some seniors. No prep, no mess meals. Factor Meals are 100% ready to heat and eat. Take it from me and my in-laws. Head to factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. That's factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. Thank you, Factor Meals.
And we're back on the What Difference Does It Make podcast with our guests, Phil Rosenthal and David Wild.
Springsteen has the ability to be there for you at every age.
That's true.
When I say the peak is 75 to 85, I'm only talking about his energy on stage. His energy, like if you got to see him during that time, you saw this human lightning bolt on stage. No one else. I mean, there are people who have the ability to stand in front of you with an acoustic guitar and sing. I don't know if they could put together as beautiful a Broadway evening as Springsteen, but there are people who certainly have that energy that he has now. But no one had that energy ever in their lives that he did. 4-5 hour shows every friggin' night.
Well, that's what's so crazy about this No Nukes thing is because The River wasn't going to come out for another year. He was in the studio. He came out with this and they said, you have an hour and a half to do a 4 hour show. And he does it.
He crams all the good stuff.
I mean, the set, I don't want to do any spoilers.
remember the halftime show?
Yeah.
Tried to cram everything into 12 minutes.
Crashing into the camera, sliding in there.
It was great.
It is. It's great.
Although I have to give it to Prince.
The best.
But Prince had the rain.
The pouring rain, singing Purple Rain. You don't get a more iconic moment.
Yeah, his quote was, because it was raining, he's like, any problems, Prince? He's like, yeah, can you make it rain more? I need it harder.
You know what's funny, though? It's interesting. Like, Phil, in my opinion, the greatest of the TV writers of all time.
No. So we can,
in that category. But the greatest performers, the greatest on-stage musical performers I ever saw, Prince, Bruce, no doubt. But in each case, I got to work with them and see an example of why they are, which is at the when they did London Calling. That's like the on the Grammys tribute to Joe Strummer. That was the first Grammy performance I ever got to really brainstorm and contribute to. And it was my high school wet dream come true. The Clash, Bruce Springsteen, it was Dave Grohl when he was just, before he was on absolutely everything on earth.
Elvis Costello,
all my heroes. But I got to watch in rehearsal where Elvis just dominated. And I watched Bruce sit back. And it was like, I said to Ken Ehrlich, who was, executive producer, I said, I can't believe it. It's amazing. Bruce is like letting Elvis own this moment. It's like he's so gracious because Bruce was already on the show doing The Rising, that same show. This is like his second performance. I'm like, oh, he's just giving this to Elvis. And that was rehearsal. And then when the show was on, it was like I watched him like he was it was like a motorcycle and he started revving and he just took it. Bruce just stole the fucking performance.
Can't help it.
I'm also reminded of the Prince guitar solo at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Genius.
Where he was during dress rehearsal, like at half speed, just not doing anything, like underplaying everything. And then, once it's showtime, he just revs it up and then you could see the joy. Everyone just stands back.
Magical toss in the air.
Yeah. Still up in the air. That guitar.
Well, did you guys see that last year or earlier this year, maybe it was, there was a new Joel Gallon, who Phil and I sort of came together doing all the tribute to heroes and all these telethons, starting out with Joel years ago. We were known as the Tragedians working together on these things. But like this year, Joel did a new edit of the Prince Rock and Roll Hall of Fame performance that came out. If you go online and find it, he did. And it's like, it was even more amazing. It's even more impossible.
Of Prince.
Right. But the funniest thing is in the new shots, there's a guy on the side of the stage who for one day, the whole internet was like, that's you, David Wilde. And I had to go. I would know if I was standing on the side of the stage because my mouth would have been wide. And it was just a guy.
But sometimes you're at events, David, and you miss the thing. Like you invited me to all the Music Cares stuff, which is just great. If you guys ever get a chance to go to any of these, they're the best tribute shows. Yeah. David puts them on. The Dylan one. Dylan came out at the end. He didn't sing, but he made a speech and he talked. And it was like the first time anyone had ever heard him be, first of all, really articulate. And number two, say something with heart and emotion about his feelings, about his career. And we were blown away. We were like, I can't believe I'm here for this. Yeah. Right. It's like Bob Dylan sharing his feelings with us. I said to David after the show, it's like, wasn't that amazing? He was backstage. I missed it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's right. When I heard about that, I was like, he's giving a eulogy to himself. Listen to this.
It's absolutely amazing. You've heard it since, right, David?
I have. You know, what's interesting is when you say eulogy, Dave, it made me think that during the pandemic, the most emotional moment for me, I'm sad to say it wasn't, and I lost friends, so this is horrible. But I think maybe my most emotional memory was literally when Dylan came out with that new 18-minute yeah. song during the pandemic, because when I heard the song, I said, oh no, Dylan's dying, and he's putting this out like as his last state, like a will and testament.
Yes.
And the funny thing is, like, but these guys who have it in them to perform, it's amazing to me because, like, and someone very close to Dylan told me, this is like before the pandemic, he's done with the road. Right now, he's out there having put out a great new album, and he's playing new shows where he's playing like most of the new album, which is something he's never done.
Yeah.
And it's like the fact that how lucky are we to have artists like Dylan, like Bruce? We don't have Prince anymore, but like artists who
the Stones,
it's like that they keep this edge or hunger their whole way. And in a lot of bands are out because they don't have money. Like, it cannot be that with Bruce or Bob Dylan. No. It can't be that.
I heard Bruce is actually planning a tour with the band. The thing is, this is the soundtrack of our lives. And for me, the most powerful moment of the Broadway show is at the end when he says, I could cry thinking about it because it's so beautiful to me. He goes, I hope I've been a good traveling companion. That's really what he's been. That's what he wanted to be. And that's what he did so beautifully and has done and is still doing it. These are our traveling companions. Literally,
yeah.
You go in the car, you put them on. Yeah. Right? You take a walk, you put them on in your earphones. You know, they've gotten us through life. Their power and their importance cannot be underestimated.
Your kid, Phil, love Bruce or no? I don't know.
I don't think they did because I loved them so much. So
right. It made them uncool.
Like I'm showing this thing tonight. I can't get them to sit and watch it. I'm like, I'm telling you, this is the greatest thing you will ever see. This, I'm telling you, will understand now, if you watch this, why I'm so crazy. You will understand your father if you watch it. Not interested.
Not interested.
Dave and I have this conversation regularly. Yes.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. I took my son, my younger hipster son, who is a DJ in college still, I took him to Phil's to watch the Hyde Park. And this is when he was still in high school. And it was just in time to get him to do something like that. Like now he would never do that.
Did he like it?
He said it was amazing.
Oh, that's good.
But I think that's the last time he said anything about about Bruce. So I think it's like, it's just funny. Like, we love him too much for them to.
Yeah. I mean, I took them as soon as they were like old enough, I took them to see him, but he was already doing the Seeger sessions.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I loved it. No, yeah. I loved it. I couldn't love it more because I grew up in a house with the Weavers. Right.
Okay.
So I love this music. I love
the communist.
It's a Jamaican Queens thing, I think.
I spent an afternoon with Pete Seeger. Did I ever tell you that?
Yeah. You've never told. I've interviewed him. I never met him in person. What was he like?
Yeah, yeah. He was a hard ass. He was not like a warm, fuzzy guy. He was like, if somebody said, you know, he's a communist, I would say, I see it. all the fun of a communist, but I couldn't love him more. Gorgeous, you know. He pulled out his banjo and started playing. I mean, it's like crazy. So I love that music, and the music very high spirited. And Springsteen was doing great shows with that band. And the kids, you know, for the up tempos, they kind of got it, but that doesn't stay with them. They don't care.
It's funny about the Seeger sessions. So my parents had a love of Springsteen before me. They were really, when you talk about being on the road, I remember all our road trips were Springsteen. So there was that. We ended up, Tate, my husband and I took them to the Seeger session at the Greek Theater. We took them to see the Seeger sessions.
Yes, I was there.
So that was a fun show. I mean, I thought that was really great. Fun. But my kids, who are not Springsteen, they're young adults now, not Springsteen fans, and nobody's ever really turned them on to him. However, when they would go in the car with my parents would play the Seeger session, so they know all of those songs.
That's great.
Yeah.
I just think...
For when I meet people who say they weren't into Springsteen or not into Springsteen, I'm like, you never saw him, right?
Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you saw him, you got him.
One of the funniest afternoons of my life was there was an afternoon where Dylan and Springsteen both came in for rehearsal. They were both on the same Grammy show. And the funny thing is that so Bruce comes in and Tom Hanks had come in right before him to read the intro for what I had written for him to say before Bruce. And it was the Seeger Sessions. He was debuting the Seeger Sessions on the Grammys. Because it was about Pete Seeger, too, I wrote like two paragraphs of just my love of Bruce, like the way we're talking now. And Bruce came in and Tom came in and read it and sounded great, like it would with Tom Hanks. And then Bruce came in and he goes, I want to see the intro. And I showed him the intro. He goes, two paragraphs. I can't live up to it. Pick one. And literally I had to go and like cut it in half because he goes, I can't live up to two paragraphs. So then Bob Dylan comes in. And in that case, I was going the other way because John Mayer was going to introduce him. And I just had him go, ladies and gentlemen, the originator, Bob Dylan, just like minimalist kind of thing. And Bob Dylan looks at it and he goes, give me a little more.
Can you take some of Springsteen?
Yeah.
Exactly. I just took a paragraph. Yeah. Well, you sort of just could.
Cut and paste. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I thought this was a joke. Springsteen, Dylan and Springsteen walk into a bar.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Great. Pretty great. I heard that during the We Are the World recording that everyone was doing their part and Dylan came in. And he didn't really know how to sing the phrase. So people were imitating Dylan to Dylan.
Oh, Stevie Wonder, I think, is the one who did it. What about to do it like himself? Yes.
Do it like this.
Phil, do you know that when I had a brainstorming, he wanted me to write a treatment for an idea he had, which was a fake history of an album, sort of like the stuff he ended up doing with Scorsese in the last doc. But this is like 2001.
Yeah, I don't like that. I don't like that.
Well, he wanted to do it in a different way.
That's Dylan's sense of humor.
I don't like when the joke's on me. I want to be in on the joke with you.
But that was the time I did Dylan for Dylan by accident.
You did?
Yeah. I said, well, we don't want it to be like that fight scene in Hard to Hold, which is a terrible movie he was in with Rupert Everett and Fiona, the pop star. And he goes, what fight scene? And I went, you know, the one where you go, and it was and I realized, holy shit, I just did my stupid fucking
for Dylan. Did he notice?
Oh yeah, he laughed. He was so. It's always that like don't meet like Phil. Your experiences with Bruce, maybe you should discuss. But like these people say, don't meet your heroes. Like Dylan was the opposite. He was so cool. He was so funny. Right. He wrapped cookies for my kids. He couldn't have been more perfect.
Okay. So this is my wallet. I just got a photo from my wallet. This is from the year 2000. I want to say.
No picture of his wife in his wallet.
Oh, who's that kid? I know.
My wife said that.
Very important.
She said, you're smiling more in this photo than our wedding picture. And I said, yeah, but I married you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Only because
he didn't ask me.
Yeah.
That'll make it onto our YouTube.
Yeah.
I know. In the
Except
wallet.
I'll Photoshop myself.
Literally in the wallet.
And you didn't have to wait 2 hours, or actually it was more. I met Bruce on Rosh Hashanah for a book signing.
At the Grove?
Yeah, it happened to be that day. Like, all right, it's Rosh Hashanah. This is my temple.
This is it.
It was meant to be. So I was like, I'm getting in line, and I waited, and you know, same thing. Like, just the biggest grin on my face. Like, all it took was like, you know, like 3 seconds with him. But you know, I was like, I got to touch his leather jacket. Like, oh my God, this is so soft. This is really nice. Like, this is wonderful. I asked him, would you have done this for Elvis? He's like, yeah, I would have.
I've gotten to meet him several times now. He's always nice. He seems to almost recognize me at this point.
He gives the, hey, you, good to see you.
I'm totally tongue-tied and flustered every time. I really, you know, your dream is that he'll be your friend. Right. He has a lot of friends. He doesn't need Phil as his friend. And it's never going to be. So I'm fine just him being Bruce and me being over here.
As he's out there, you know, on the talk shows promoting, I saw him on Colbert during the show when they showed the clip from No Nukes from the concert. And he was, you know, picture and, you know, they had him a close up of yes. Bruce on screen. And he was, you know, it was a part of the show where he was like it looked like he was asking for the adulation, you know, yes. And he was watching. And then he looked a little pained.
Yes.
Did you get that, or was I misinterpreting that?
He's embarrassed by his younger self, as everyone yeah. is. I think he so enjoyed, and he admits that he was wrong in not documenting more of these shows. He has said that he didn't want to film at the time because he thought it would be as if the magician was showing how he'd do the trick.
Yeah.
And he wanted you to come out and see the show. He didn't want film.
Here's the funny thing about this was filmed on his 30th birthday.
That's right.
He was lit. So there was a little of like, you know, he was making jokes about he's old, he's over the hill, his heart can't take it anymore. Someone gives him a birthday cake and he takes it and then just throws it back in the audience. I don't want to be reminded of this. I'm old now. I'm in my 30s. Life is over. Yeah. I'm on the downhill exactly. slope. It's yeah. done. That's part of the joy of this is like, you know, you see where it's going, of but course. You know, exactly. But in that moment, it's like, nope. I don't want to be reminded of this.
Everyone watching is like, oh, to be 30 again.
Right.
And look at the energy that 30-year-old has.
I just remembered it. No Nukes is where he had one of his unfortunate incidents. Like Bruce hasn't had that much embarrassing stuff, but there was the famous thing where Lynn Goldsmith, the photographer, was his girlfriend, and I think they had just broken up. There was a bit of scandal because he pulled her out of the crowd and said some negative, like not nice stuff about her at the No Nukes show.
That's not
no kidding.
There. That's not.
I'll
in
bet
there.
That's not in this.
No, that is not in there.
You know, I am right about this. This is the story. Is that let's not forget about Bruce's well-documented public humiliation of ex-girlfriend and celeb photographer Lynn Goldsmith. He literally said something like, he was unhappy that she was in the pit taking photos.
Oh, wow.
I think he had said, don't, this is just what I remember. And yep. he said something like, this is my ex fucking girlfriend. She shouldn't fucking be here. Like, and sort of like, I don't know. It's an incident that, you know, Bruce has done very little wrong, but that was one.
This is the first time I've ever heard any kind of like meanness
yeah.
or even if it was justified. All you hear, and I don't know if you remember this, Dave, but in Rolling Stone magazine around this time were these legends of Springsteen on the road. I meet a kid. He says, you want to come to my house for dinner? And I go for dinner. And it's great because yeah. you get the sister and you get the mom and you get the dad and you get the whole life. And you're like, and then there was a kid in the hospital. I went, it's like Babe Ruth going to visit right. a kid in the hospital. Right. You know, one for you kid. That was like the legendary stories of this God.
You showed that movie. There was a documentary like that.
Springsteen and Me.
Yeah,
which had all those stories. It was great. Yeah. Just great.
Know, that's a great documentary. And it ends, you know how they ended that doc with a three-song set of him and Paul McCartney.
It's interesting. The No Nukes, the other thing about No Nukes that just came to mind was Tom Petty was on the show. And I remember Tom, when this is like 91 or 2, I asked him about it. He goes, oh, man, that's enemy territory. He goes like, because those are the two, to me, I actually put Bruce a little higher because I'm from New Jersey, but I also love Tom Petty, and they're the two guys that had consistently great bands, did so much great work, and kept going for a long, long time. But Tom said, man, we were going into enemy territory, like Madison Square Garden, like trying to compete with Bruce and his band there. Like they were friends, but they were rivals. That was like an East Coast, West Coast. There was, yeah. They were competitive, and
well,
and
in the Tom, full in the whole No Nukes movie, you see other artists there in the bowels of the garden, and you hear from above, Bruce, yeah. while other people are performing, and I think it was Jackson Brown goes, who's this Bruce?
there is another weird moment, like it's a Bruce thing shtick that he always does where he's like, all right, I just want to I want to warn everybody. But in the moment it's just kind of bizarre because he goes and talks to someone and then he comes to the front and says, all right, I need to stop the show for a second. And now in this day and age you're like, yes. Oh my god, something bad, what's, you know, why is this? But yeah. Of course it's a a broomstick. And of course, you know, like, okay, everything's good. He's going to be doing this crazy dance. And I don't think anybody can survive doing this, you know, trying to, you know, replicate what we're trying to do here. But when he stops the show, you're like, you stop for a second, like, oh my God, what's happening? And then like, oh, what an innocent time. I wish that was back.
But here's the thing. This is why he might be the greatest performer of all time, because no one has ever understood theater like him. He gets it. He understands the theatrical gesture, the theatrical dance, the theatrical projection, the theatrical stage presence. That's theater. I studied theater. Nobody has this in rock and roll. And that includes the connection with the audience, the talking to the audience. Even Prince does not talk to you and connect with you as a person the way Springsteen is almost a religious leader, you know, and
almost engages. Almost.
For years, he would do the whole preacher bit, right?
Yeah.
All I know is we go to the same, Phil and I go to the same temple, and I've seen Phil at Springsteen shows much more than a temple.
Yes. If the cantor could sing like that, I'd be there. Do you have a favorite Springsteen song in general? I think I have one. I think it's 10th Avenue Freeze Out.
Because
it has everything that I love about Springsteen.
It tells his story.
The joy, the majesty. You know, that opening is like the king is coming. It's like a fanfare. And then the drum roll, and then you're in this great, joyous, swinging rock and roll that has ties to the swing era of jazz, and it's just a big, fun song.
It's all about Bat Scooter, whose initials are BS.
Yes.
You guys must be writers with your descriptions of the... you give great descriptions.
For this podcast, I think one thing that interests me is that Bruce in the 80s, my least favorite Bruce record just about is Born in the USA. And I love certain songs on it so much.
Yes.
Downbound Drain, which is the only non-hit on the album, is one of my favorites. But I don't love the album. There's something about that moment, maybe the overexposure,
maybe the muscles.
The muscles. Bruce became less of a hippie freak, Jersey oddball.
Well, it was a really swing at commercialism, wasn't it?
Yes.
I mean, and it worked. A big swing. That hit.
Okay, David, what's yours? What's your favorite? Can you pick a favorite right now? Because I agree with you, Phil, in that it evolves. Yes. And, you know, ask me tomorrow, and I might feel differently. But what's your favorite song?
Tunnel of Love.
A great song.
I love when Bruce's idealism gave way to some reality. That's why I love the show. It's like you really see that his aspirational, romantic dream of what life and rock and roll could be, when it hit a wall around then, that's when he's most interesting to me. It's kind of like with Sinatra, who, you know, Bruce said that's his favorite. I'm a big Sinatra fan. I wrote liner notes for duets. I'm a big Sinatra fan. But the truth is, I don't like young Sinatra. I don't like big band Sinatra. I don't even love the Capitol as much as I like the old Frank. Yesterday.
Really?
Before you were listening to this.
I like when they can't sing anymore.
That's why I love Dylan so much. This yesterday, from when we were recording this, was the 40th anniversary of the last great Frank Sinatra studio record. And it's called She Shot Me Down. And it's like his last attempt to really do a new album of new songs and that he hadn't done for the most part. And he does a song, a Sondheim song called Going Gone. It's like about, it's just this old man, you know, talking about love and, you know, where things went wrong. That's my dream. That's why I think I really only listen to Bruce's recent albums now. I very rarely, Darkness, for some reason, Darkness is the one I go back to of the classic great era. Like that's my favorite for some reason. It's also the first one I remember like buying with my own money. But for whatever reason, I like when artists get old and have to get through on just pure, like.
Very convenient, David. Yeah. Very convenient.
Yeah, exactly. Very on brand for me. Exactly.
I don't think I would call necessarily Tunnel of Love. I mean, it's more recent, but it's not that recent.
No.
88.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. It followed his marriage break.
Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah. Yeah, he met Julianne on the 84 tour at the Sports Arena. And then 4 years later, even though he dedicated the album to her, it's about their breakup, which I always felt was really odd. Like, this is, our marriage is deteriorating. Here's to my lovely wife, Julianne.
I have this memory of, I think I went with the writer from Rolling Stone. We covered the opening of the Tunnel of Love tour at Worcester, Mass. Bruce used to open, a lot of artists used to open their tours in Worcester, Massachusetts, because it was the cheapest place, I think, to do rehearsals and things. It was like, they gave like the unions, whatever, because like doing shit at Madison Square Garden is much more expensive. So a lot of things, Bruce, I think, often started in Worcester. So we were at the Worcester Centrum, and my strong memory is I had a backstage access, and I was standing there with Rob Lowe, and Rob Lowe was saying, talking about Patty, like, oh man, I like to hit that, or some version of sort of like, and then
probably did.
And yeah, well, I do, but I remember then I think Bruce came up and like hugged Patty, and it was like, huh? You know, it was like, you know, it was like something was going, you know, we realized, okay, things have changed.
Yeah. Instead of Patty in the back, she was four in the front of the stage now, and kind of a bigger part of the show. An interesting time. When was the last time you actually played a Springsteen album?
You know, there's this, Apple said they have high-res lossless now. If you have wired headphones and a digital to analog converter, and I actually got a little one that plugs into the bottom of the phone. I download the stuff in high-res or stream it in high-res, and I have these beautiful earphones. And there's not a day that goes by that I'm not listening to something from Springsteen, just going through my thousands and thousands of songs. He's half of it.
Yeah.
So he's always coming up. You know, the last album, he's facing for the first time, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, David, songs about death and losing people, right?
Yeah, it's really the most.
And there's a song called I'll See You in My Dreams.
Yeah.
It came out when I lost a friend, a very old friend, Jeremy Stevens, came out that week. And I remember taking Jeremy to his first Springsteen concert, and he became a fan. And that song it so typified how you feel about losing a buddy, you know, not a parent, not a child, God forbid, but, you know, a friend, a lifelong friend. And the writing of it is so great. The performance is so great.
He ended up doing it on the 9/11 memorial, and it was so powerful. We had talked to him about doing it at the Grammys as our part of our memoriam. It didn't work out. And then he did it at the 9/11 thing, and I thought it was beautiful. So powerful.
It is powerful. I read the lyrics at Jeremy's memorial.
Oh, wow.
So, it, you know, there he is, that traveling companion again.
Right? Jeremy was one of the Raymond writers, but he was also like a little older. He had co-created the Electric Company with Morgan Freeman in the past. And Phil fought to keep him a vital TV writer. He was a great guy.
Oh, nice.
But yeah, that I didn't know you did that at the memorial.
Oh, that's really sweet.
But that, it just shows you how relevant at the different times in your life that the guy's there for you.
Yeah.
Right? When you want to dance around like an idiot, there's that song. Right? When you need a memorial, something to say at the memorial, there's that song. Who has that range?
We are both such Springsteen fans that, like, there was one time, Phil, do you remember when I was working with Jimmy Iovine on his speech, when he gave the commencement speech at USC, when he opened up with Dr. Dre, his whole school there and all that. Yeah. And it was one of these things where I was in New York doing a big event for CBS, and Jimmy goes, I need you. I'm going to fly you back tomorrow. I could not leave New York because of what I was doing work-wise. And he goes, I need you to fly back. And I thought, what the hell am I going to do? Because billionaires don't like when you say no. And so I said, Jimmy, I got someone better than me. And I called Phil and I said, Phil, will you go help for a couple of days, help Jimmy Iovine with this while I'm gone? And he goes, Phil Rosenthal, that's an upgrade. I'll take him. Yes. And Phil, I said, Phil, you can ask him about anything about Bruce you want. And that's what you did. And he was so happy to have you directing him for a couple of days.
He was quite entertaining.
Yes,
very. Did you get anything from him that you didn't know? Anything Springsteen related?
No, you know, there was something that I learned later that I certainly would ask him about, because where I grew up in New City, New York, in Rockland County, I didn't realize it, but the recording studio where Springsteen recorded Greetings from Asbury Park, E Street Shuffle, and Born to Run was 3 minutes from my house. And I didn't learn that until a couple of years ago. It was in his autobiography on Route 304, right there in Blauvelt, which is the next town over.
Oh, yeah, I knew Blauvelt.
Literally a 3 minute drive from my house. Had I known,
you could have been there.
Stalker.
Still would have, yeah.
Jimmy told me a story that is one of my favorite stories, which is Jimmy Iovine is like, you know, engineer who becomes like Bruce's like main guy. And they, after Born to Run, Bruce is now the biggest deal in the world all of a sudden. And the world can't wait for another album, right? And so Jimmy is still living with his parents. And his dad is a works the dots in Brooklyn, right? And so the day they finally finish, I guess, what's Darkness, Jimmy's the only one with like a copy of it, like a cassette of the album as finished. And he leaves it. He gets back in the like 4 a.m. and leaves it on the kitchen counter. And Jimmy says that his father took it, went to work, and goes, I'm playing it on the docks for the guys, and everybody loves it. And Jimmy goes, knowing how Bruce didn't want anyone to hear anything, was like, get the fuck, turn it off. You know? It's doing really well here at the docks.
It's testing really well on the docks.
Yeah.
Was it the Born to Run album that Springsteen, he heard the cut, and he heard the cut of the album, and he went out to the swimming pool and threw the tape in?
Yes, yeah. I think that's true. Yes. Yeah.
Have either one of you read the Stephen Van Zandt book yet?
I have. It's great.
Is it? Yeah.
It's great. And the thing that shocked me was how he, obviously that relationship's super close, but he is very open about what went wrong and why he left. And he says it was a huge mistake, but he also says like the complexities of his relationship with Landau and how much credit he was getting and how much money he was getting. It's very revealing. It's stuff I did never heard, never knew.
Yeah.
I did not like the Bruce band. When I saw that live, like when him without the E Street Band, it felt really weird to me.
Yeah.
But I was at the unplugged but became plugged taping Bruce.
That's and great.
This is my most Zelig-like moment in a very Zelig-like life. When he did one of the songs I don't like that Phil apparently likes more, Roll of the Dice. Like there's a couple songs on Human Touch that seem like they could be Eddie Money songs. Like the lyrics, there's not subtle metaphors like Roll of the Dice. Right. But I do like Roll of the Dice because when he threw
the energy of it.
Yes, but he threw pink dice into the little, and it was, by the way, I remember vividly, I was standing near REM, who were walking around together. Like that's a band that liked him. This is a very 80s memory, but he threw the dice. I caught the dice.
That means you're getting married.
Yeah. I have them somewhere. I still have them.
Yes.
Somewhere.
Max is still, he's still holding up. I don't know how he does it. Yeah, I know. It's crazy.
I really, to play drums that hard.
Yeah.
I
think that about any drummer. That
backstage, his arms were in ice like baseball players.
And you're watching No Nukes, and you see, you know, they're behind the drum riser, and there's Max looking behind, just, you know, making sure that he's doing exactly what Bruce is, you know, matching his moves. It's a work of art from Max Weinberg in this New Nukes performance.
By the way, I think, Phil, your dad and Max Weinberg made the name Max so much cooler.
They're the coolest Maxes.
I know, Dave, you always make fun of me because I like to know the personal, the family stuff. I love seeing your parents in your show. I think it's the sweetest thing. But I swear to you, when I found out you were from Queens and they, you know, lived in Queens.
Yeah.
I swear they must be from the same town as my family.
We lived in Kew Gardens, I think.
Gardens. Okay. Yeah.
And then only until I was 2, and then we moved to Riverdale in the Bronx. It was quite the upgrade. And from there, when I was 9, we moved to New City in Rockland County. Rockland County, the poor man's Westchester.
Yeah, exactly. No, when I saw them and I listened to them, I think they had to be friends with my
they probably
family.
Would have been.
They were. Yeah. I was privileged to know, you know, deal with them and get to know them a little bit over the years. But I will say what's really amazing about Phil's show, I have never seen a show that reaches a broader demographic. and like Everybody Loves Raymond, where the parents became this like TV icons and made Jewish and Italian parents, you realize they're all the same. But your actual parents, like there's things like, I introduced Phil to Brad Paisley, who's and his wife Kim. They're the biggest fans of Somebody Feed Phil is like their favorite show in history. And it's amazing internationally, right? In your travels, Phil, like your parents connected around the world.
It's absolutely insane because they didn't leave the kitchen.
But that, how did that come to be, by the way? Like I finished up an episode. Was that initially the plan to talk to the parents about your travels?
My parents have always been a great source of material. And the Raymond Show shows that a bit. And then I did a movie, a documentary about going to Russia. The Russians asked me to come over there and help them turn my sitcom into Everybody Loves Kostya. And I said I would do it if they let me document it. So I brought a camera crew and we documented the whole process. And during that
process, Exporting Raymond, and if you haven't seen it, is it available for people to watch?
It is. You can get it on iTunes and Apple, and it's a truly funny, true story because of how much I suffered. There was one scene I had been trying to get in to a Russian family's house to see how they live, and I got in. And we filmed a dinner there, and I was talking to the grandparents, and they told me how much they use the computer and they love the computer. I'm like, my parents, I wish that they could see. In fact, we do Skype and everything. Let's call my parents. Just like that. I just off the top of my head, I said, let's call my parents. And they just happened to be up, and we Skyped with my parents from Russia. And it's the single best thing in the movie because my mother is like talking like this to the people. And I said, you don't have to be so close, Mom. Like this, thinking that the microphone is in the camera. So she's talking like, anyway, I never forgot that. So when I got the Food and Travel Show, number one, I wanted a surefire funny thing in every episode. And number two, the Skype home or the Zoom home is the modern day equivalent of the postcard,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Hey, look where I am, Ma. Hey, look, wish you were here. How's it going? And that's it. So it's very, I think, relatable because we all call home or Skype home from wherever we are. And I know that they're comic geniuses.
Yeah. I mean, every episode looked like the genuine love and surprise by how quick and funny your parents are. Like, oh, of course they come up with this amazing moment. And yeah, I love them so much. And that, I mean, that's.
I owe them only everything.
Phil, how many? You have tons of Emmys. He's winning an Emmy. What did you win this year for Somebody Feed Phil? He won some Critics' Choice. Like you were you were a reality star male
star of the year.
That's better than sexiest man of the year, I think.
You know, dude, it's better than sexiest.
Yeah, for sure. It's
just male all around male.
Right.
And I told my wife and she said, male? Not to overly impress you, but do you know who female star of the year was? Dr. Pimple Popper. Not kidding.
But you beat out like Trevor Noah, some great other people.
I beat out for male star of the year. I beat out RuPaul.
Wow.
How about that? Maybe dress a little differently next time, RuPaul, and you'll get mail.
There you go.
What organization?
People, you're fooling people.
What? A TV show?
What organization awards Male of the Year?
Critics' Choice Awards for their unscripted. They have an unscripted whole show.
Oh, in unscripted. Okay.
So that this awards is for, I guess, reality-based show.
Is this like the Golden Globes and no one knows exactly who these people are or who are these critics?
They're the critics.
They're the critics.
They're television critics. I don't know.
Okay.
I think they're fantastic. Why? Because I'm male star.
You got a major award. That's it. That's all we know.
Don't you wear a crown for the year and a sash or something?
I should.
Yeah.
I'm actually amazed that I don't get a little more respect in the world.
So when we put this up, we're going to hashtag male of the year. Yeah. What's the
male
exact
star
name
of the year? Yes.
Okay. Is that the microwave?
That's my timer saying enough already.
All right.
Okay, before Phil goes, last story before we
this happened last time too.
Phil took me to the best pizza on earth and then told me in Italy where to go for the real best pizza on earth. But the most amazing thing is when we went to do a Everybody Loves Raymond like speaking event with the writers and I was moderating, we were in Arizona and he goes, I'm taking you to the best pizza in America. And I'm like, in fucking Arizona? And you took us to the place, what's it called, Phil?
Pizzeria Bianco.
Yes, Pizzeria Bianco. But the funny thing is, he took us there, and it was truly the best pizza I've ever had in America. But then you went back. You went back with someone much more famous than the Raymond writers and myself.
Also from New Jersey.
Can you tell? Yeah, tell that story. That's amazing.
Jack Nicholson.
You took Jack Nicholson there?
For pizza. I did.
There's got to be more of the story.
The end. Okay. We were going to basketball. I was with a friend of mine who's friends with Jack Nicholson. We took his plane to, I was invited. This is not, I don't All usually right. do this kind of thing, but I was invited. I went, I get on the plane. There's Jack Nicholson. I'm like gobsmacked. My only contribution to this evening is I happen to know if before the ball game, a place to get very good pizza, maybe the best pizza in America. And Jack was into it. So of course we're going because it's Jack's world. And we go and we sit down and he's like, what was your name again? And I said, Phil. He goes, you seem to know where good things. I said, yeah. He goes, you know, some other good restaurants in Los Angeles. I said, I'm happy to make a list for you. He goes, I would love that. Nobody ever gives me a good place. I'm like, wow, I'm in with Jack.
Oh man.
And we go and you know, we're eating, everything's great. And I remember thinking, do these people know that I'm sitting here with Jack? Nobody's going crazy as I would, because this was like 20 years ago. Okay.
That's bizarre that he's not being at least approached.
Okay. So we get up, we pay, we get up to leave, and the entire restaurant gets up and gives Jack a standing ovation, a standing ovation. And he just nods and smiles because he's used to this.
Yeah.
And we go in the car to the Phoenix Center, whatever that's called. What's that called, David? You know, the whatever the
Skyway.
For the Suns?
Yeah,
where the Suns play. Yeah. We go in and all of a sudden the entire stadium is standing and cheering. Why? Because the moment we walked in, we were on the Jumbotron. And they saw Jack Nicholson. So it doesn't matter if you're in a 30-seat pizzeria or a 15,000-seat stadium. Everyone is giving this man, wherever he goes, is standing ovation.
All right, Phil, this is it's a music podcast. Yeah. I was looking at your IMDb. You're credited for something called Boy Meets World, the theme song. What's can you explain this before you leave?
I can. That's called a mistake. Oh.
I was like, wow, he can
read on the online. I know this is going to break a lot of hearts. Not everything online is true.
Wow. I saw it on Facebook.
I'm sorry. I'm not, even though you're saying it, I'm not going to accept this as the truth.
My IMDb consistently says that I wrote and directed something called Bitches with Blades. And it apparently shows a lot. It should have
corrected.
Did you put that up yourself?
Yeah, I think you guys are punking each other is what you
No, there's credits that I want on there that I can't get. Like, does it say male star of the year anyway? No.
Well, you know what? I'm going to add it. Let's add it. Well, let's get out to the Wikipedia page.
To be fair, Phil, there's still some challenges by your wife that you're winning that award.
The male part.
Until that's worked through the court system.
Male?
They put you in as male.
It's a done deal. He's received the award. So, you know, it doesn't matter what she says.
I don't even think they bother sending you anything.
Well, you have the knowledge that you. Yeah,
that's right. You have it. Someone announced it from an envelope.
I had to record a thank you. And then they put the credit there. So I have that piece of tape.
Yeah. Can we go out with you singing your famous theme for Boy Meets World?
Yeah. It could be our new theme song.
One day a boy went outside. That's how it starts.
Like, Phil is my most successful friend, but I will say I've never seen anyone who still stayed such a fan with music. Like, he's come to like these Grammy salutes and things like that. And literally he will go when like Lady Gaga is up singing an Elton John song. He will come and help and sit in the front row and applaud and not like when Bruce played, there was a show for racial tolerance, a special we did where it started with 41 shots or whatever with all, like Sting and John Legend, everyone joining him. We sat in the front row like fanboys.
Yeah.
And we just, it's like,
why do these things if you're not going to enjoy the thing of it? Right.
Thank you. Yes.
And are you too cool? Why do you have to be too cool to not, you know, like show your emotion about it?
In any case, thank you, Phil, for doing this.
Phil, go enjoy Bruce Springsteen's 30th birthday party, all right?
Much better.
Yes.
Much better. You got it.
It was really great. I got more than I got so much joy out of
you. He already said he got more than he wanted.
No. When I keep talking.
He didn't mean it like that. He misspoke.
No, it's the Enough Already podcast.
Oh, my God.
He's complaining about the portions?
Yeah.
And small. They weren't very good, but they were here a long time.
We cannot try to be funny with funny guys.
No, Thank you both of you for doing the heavy lifting. We just kind of let you guys go, and it was wonderful.
I'm exhausted.
So, yes, thank you.
But David is used to going on and on and on.
Oh, they know. The last show,
You were on fire.
He hadn't slept is the problem.
For the last show, to Holly.
I love meeting you both. David, I enjoyed seeing you again.
Yes. Okay. All right. Thank you, both of you. Thank you so much.
This was so fun.
Happy holidays. Enjoy. Thank you so very much.
Good night. Have a good holiday, everybody.
Yes, you too.
Have fun.
Yeah.
Lovely to meet you.
Nice thank to you meet so you. Much. It was a joy. Wow. That was really what a treat. That was a lot of fun. Amazing talking to two truly talented individuals.
Yeah, they totally blow me away. They're hilarious. They're very funny and very articulate and very passionate about what they do. And it was such a treat to talk to them. It was a long chat, and I could have talked to them for a lot longer.
I've loved Everybody Loves Raymond for so long, and the family loves Somebody Feed Phil. I love going on a journey with him. I feel like I know him, even though I don't, on watching this show. So it was great to see that, you know, he might be a reality star, but when he plays in reality, he's actually that same person in real life. Does that even make sense?
He's real.
He's a real man. He's a real man, right?
He is a real man.
Just ask the Critics' Choice. They'll tell you.
Everything he works on turns to gold. My daughter and I decided that we would like to follow along from season one all the way through season four and just hit up every place he's been, which I'm sure is not uncommon for viewers of the show.
It was a lot of fun with him. Great to talk music with him. And David Wilde is always a treat. And I think that will not be the last you see of him, unless he's just had enough of our shenanigans.
I hope that's not the case. He's a great guest and very knowledgeable about so many things and just has stories, you know. I think he has endless amounts of stories, so we would love to have him back. We'd have both of them back, happily.
Oh, 100%. Please follow us on YouTube. We've got a YouTube channel. And Holly, why don't you tell us all about that?
Check us out on YouTube at What Difference Does It Make Podcast. We have outtakes from all our interviews. And just some little nuggets that you might not hear on the podcast. So check us out.
Also on social media, the secret initials are WDDIM podcast for What Difference Does It Make. If this is your first time listening, welcome to the What Difference Does It Make podcast. Thank you for joining us. Please like, subscribe. We've got more fun ahead in the new year. So keep listening. So until next time, this is Dave.
This is Holly.
Check you later.
Over and out.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett. Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's fantasypoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. Fantasypoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.